Hello and welcome to the debate here at Press TV. The schizophrenia continues by the United States and its allies. Washington, London, Paris have fired missiles on three facilities in Syria to allegedly stop the Syrian government from using chemical weapons on its own people. At the same time, the U.S. says its main goal in Damascus continues to be the defeat of terrorist groups. However, it is the Syrian government and its allies who are actually fighting and becoming more victorious over the terrorists. So what is going on there? Stay with us as we try to take a closer look at all of this confusion right here on this debate.
Residents of Damascus woke up on Saturday by the sounds of Syrian air defenses repelling a U.S., British, French attack on their soil with over 110 missiles, mostly targeting a scientific research center in Damascus. The Russian Ministry of Defense said Syria used 30-year-old systems of S-125, S-200, Pok, and Kfadrat to intercept the missiles. The Syrian army says it shot down many missiles.
Our aerial defense system confronted with high capability the missiles of the aggression and shot down the majority of them. Some missiles hit the building of a scientific center in Barzeh, which includes an educational center and scientific laboratories. This caused material damage.
Shortly after the attack, Syrians took to the streets in defiance of the aggression, waving flags of Syria, Russia, Iran, and Hezbollah. They expressed their steadfastness and their mood of victory rather than defeat. They said they do not fear any Western attack.
They attacked us. What did they benefit? Nothing. We are steadfast. I brought my wife and son to Tishrin Park here. Then we are going to have lunch. I tell the United States that we are on the streets.
Every time the Syrian army achieves a victory, they attack and try to obstruct such victories. We are victorious. If we were not, we wouldn't be here at this moment.
Syria's foreign ministry has condemned the strikes, saying they constitute a blatant violation of international law and the principles of the UN Charter. The ministry underlined that the attack comes prior to the arrival of an OPCW investigators to Douma in eastern Ghouta with the aim of obstructing its mission.
Both official and popular reactions over the Western strikes on Syria could be interpreted in one word, steadfastness. This was the main message coming out from Syria in defiance of any foreign intervention in the resistive Arab country. Hamad Ali, Press TV, from the Umayyad Square, Damascus.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the program, Editor-in-Chief of theduran.com, Mr. Alexander Mercouris out of London. Thank you so much for being with us. Now, we look at this situation, this attack by the U.S. and its allies against Syria, obviously illegal according to international law. Why didn't we see coming out of the United Nations, the Secretary General, actually condemning these entities from basically ignoring international law?
Well, you have to look at the international balance of power. The United Nations and the Secretariat of the United Nations and the Secretary General of the United Nations are bureaucracies which are essentially controlled by the various great powers that together make up the permanent members of the Security Council. The Secretary General is going to have to stand eventually for re-election to his post for a next term. He doesn't want the United States and other countries vetoing his re-election, so he is going to moderate his language. He will rationalize it by saying that as the world's most important diplomat, he anyway has to keep doors open and keep people talking to each other. And for that reason, he will always speak in measured tones. So I'm afraid if you are looking from the Secretary General and people like him for resounding criticism of what has just happened in Syria, that isn't going to happen. And that is the reality of power in the world today.
So what good then does the United Nations do? I mean, if as you said, Secretary General, the leading diplomat in the world, because he's worried about wanting to keep his position, that he's not going to take any kind of stance that that shakes the status quo. So what good is this entity if he can't say anything?
Right. Well, one must distinguish between the UN Secretariat, which nonetheless does do some useful things, and the forums of the United Nations, first and foremost, the United Nations Security Council. Now, the Security Council has become today the major cockpit of international diplomacy. And one has to be very clear, under the United Nations Charter, it is the United Nations Security Council, which is the only body authorized to use force in circumstances where a state that uses force has not itself been attacked. So it is the United Nations Security Council that confers legality on the use of force when it happens and which withholds it. And it is because the Western powers have lost their ability to dominate the United Nations Security Council, which they had in the 1990s, that you see all these enormous clashes that now happen between the Western powers and Russia, and to a certain extent China, at the Security Council. But at the same time, it is also at the Security Council, and please remember, other countries can also attend sessions of the Security Council, even if they are not permanent members or even elected members. It is at the Security Council that the top diplomats meet, that they exchange positions, that they reach agreements, and where eventually agreements are made and ratified and become a part of international law.
Okay, stay with me, sir. Stay with me, sir. Let me cross out. Stay with me. Let me cross over to Beirut, get our next guest in on this discussion. Journalist and political commentator, Mr. Jihad Mourakadeh. Thank you so much for being with us. Well, is it a coincidence that this attack took place right before representatives of the OPCW were supposed to start their investigation inside of Syria?
Good evening. No, it is not a coincidence, because it is Russia who has blocked the OPCW on a few sessions already. So for them to arrive today, it's already too late. The UK, France, and the US already had proof in their possession. They took it upon themselves to act outside the UN Security Council, because Russia has been blocking the UN Security Council for quite some time already with their veto power. So if Russia has already blocked the OPCW back in November when they wanted to make the report, so using the OPCW as an excuse is a very lame excuse, and it's totally irrelevant, particularly since Syria has violated international law, international agreements, which is the non-usage of chemical weapons. In 2013, after the incident in Khan Yusuf, I can't remember, they agreed to get rid of their chemical weapons, and Russia was supposed to guarantee this. Now, time and again, since then, they have used their chemical weapons. Last year, they used it in Khan Sheikhoun, and the Trump administration bombed the Shkayrat airport.
So you're saying the use of chemical weapons had been proven, that it was the Syrian government each time. Jihad Mourakadeh, is that what you're telling me, that each time chemical weapons has been used inside of Syria, that it had been proven that the Syrian government was the culprit?
I'm saying this is what the UK, US, and France have proved.
Okay.
To that effect.
All right, well, crossing back over to London, Mr. Alexander Mercouris, your take on what our guest has just mentioned.
Well, I mean, it is disputed by Russia, and not just by Russia, but by Syria, but by many countries, by Iran, which also, of course, has people there. And there is a great deal of skepticism about this. And there are OPCW inspectors in Douma, and they are supposed to be carrying out an investigation. Can I just actually correct one particular point?
Sure.
The mechanism that failed, or which Russia vetoed in November, was not the OPCW. It was a specific investigative body that was set up, which included the OPCW, but also certain sections of the United Nations Secretariat. The OPCW is not itself an investigative agency, but it can establish whether a chemical weapons attack took place in Douma. The Russians say it didn't, the Syrians say it didn't. And you asked earlier, is it a coincidence that this attack happened just as these people from the OPCW were arriving to carry out an inspection? And I would say that it is not a coincidence. I would say that the attack was rushed through in order to force a conclusion that a chemical weapons attack had taken place before the inspectors were able to carry out an inspection and say whether an attack actually took place or not. So you have, if you like, a case of the sentence being passed before the proof that there's even been a crime.
And we saw, Mr. Marcardi, you talked about 2013. We saw back then Carlo de Ponte, and of course, who was UN representative and responsible for investigating the use of chemical weapons. And she said back then that that it was actually the so-called rebels that had used the sarin gas. So when we have these types of disputes, these claims and counterclaims, why couldn't then the United States wait a few more days, a few more weeks for this investigation to take place? It sort of, we have seen the same thing that has just happened actually in the UK, and the whole accusations against the Russian government and being involved in that double spy, and not basically waiting again for an investigation to take place. Why not wait for an investigation?
Precisely because of what happened in November last year, which I apologize, the gentleman in London is absolutely correct. It was a UN investigation committee with the OPCW whose report was blocked by Russia. Now, Russia has not been playing a fair game all along. All of a sudden, they come up and say, well, there wasn't an attack, a gas attack or a chlorine attack in Douma, and then Mr. Lavrov, the foreign minister, turns around and says, ah, but this is British intelligence making it up. And they are all over the place, Russians. They have blocked so many resolutions just this week, four or five times with their vetoes, in order to delay things. And it has become totally irrelevant. As long as the US, the UK, and France have proof, they have proof that a country called Syria, who has used chemical weapons number of times already, has again used chemical weapons, so they don't need more than that. They have a helicopter, they have a barrel bomb, and they have the proofs on the ground. So what more do you need?
Well, from a legal perspective, Mr. Morikade, what right does the United States, what right does the England, what
from
right
legal,
does France have, what rights do they have to make this decision upon their own? Who gave them that authority?
What? It is an excellent question. What right does Syria, who has agreed not to use chemical weapons, use them? What right has Russia, who has guaranteed that there will be no use of chemical weapons by Syria, and said, we guarantee Syria, allowed Syria to use chemical weapons, which are forbidden internationally.
So you're comparing,
you're comparing a sovereign country,
what a sovereign country does inside of its own country, to other countries coming and invading and attacking a sovereign country. Not really an equal analogy, I must say. Crossing back
absolutely
over to Mr. Mukhouris in London.
Absolutely, because
Alexander
Mukhouris,
your take on all of this. You've heard the comparisons and talking about basically that I guess the U.S., U.K., and the French have the right to basically do whatever they want, as they have done for many, many years all over the world.
Well, my colleague talks about proof that there's been a chemical attack in Douma. I haven't seen any. The United States says there's proof. France and Britain say there's proof. They tell us this proof is classified. Now, the Russians had some problems with this mechanism in November. The Russians have, and the Syrians have, invited the OPCW to Douma. Maybe the Russians would dispute what the OPCW says if it decides that there was a chemical attack in Douma. But that's not yet happened. So why, in view of the fact that that investigation has not happened, are we attacking Syria, which is contrary to the UN Charter, without that investigation happening, without any actual finding or proof taking place? And to come back to your original question, you are absolutely right. Certain powers, Britain, France, the United States, have taken it upon themselves to say that they are the judges of this matter. They are not the judges of this matter. They have appointed themselves to that role, but they have no legal basis to do so.
Jihad Morakadeh, when does legality, what role does legality play in all of this? Wouldn't you say that basically we'd be dealing with a law of the jungle, that any entity that decided that some other country, perhaps because of strategic reasons, is doing something against the law, that they can take it upon themselves to basically try to bomb them into oblivion?
Let's not exaggerate things. Nobody has bombed anybody into oblivion.
Well, we saw it in Libya, didn't we? We saw it in Libya, sir. We saw it in Iraq,
destroyed.
So go ahead.
We are talking about a specific case here. Now, in this specific case, when a country, the UN Charter, as you mentioned, is not there to defend people gassing their own people in contradiction to international law, in contradiction to agreements that they have signed. Now, the gentleman in London was correct in pointing out that, in his opinion, there was no gas attack. In the French and the British and the American opinion, there was a gas attack. Now, when you look at the pattern of Russian vetoes over Syria, over the last few years, you see that you have Russia protecting Syria using chemical weapons against its own people. Now, if you think this is okay, then I think it is also okay for the international community, or rather the European and the Western powers, to go after Assad, who himself has agreed that he will not use chemical weapons.
Okay, it sounds like a very neocolonialistic perspective that you're talking about London and Washington and Paris being able actually to supersede the rest of the world. Same lies, one would say, in a different wording, though. We saw in 2003. We saw in 2003 weapons of mass destruction, and the Iraqi people are still suffering from that lie, sir. So what gives them the right to rule for the world? Based on international law, we're talking about.
What gives them the right? What gives the right to people? What gives the right to Russia? What gives the right to Russia to defend somebody who is violating an agreement that they have themselves
guaranteed? The Syrian government, a sovereign
they
government, sir. Last
agreement.
Time I checked, the guy, were the ones
the
who
Assad
invited Russia in.
Agreement.
Crossing back
what
over to London,
right?
Alexander
Mukhouris.
Alexander Mukhouris, your take on this?
Yeah, well, Russia has a right of veto because it is a permanent member of the Security Council. That is its legal right under the United Nations Charter. China has expressed very similar views to Russia about this. Russia also proposed various resolutions to the United Nations Security Council. The Western powers voted against them. The Western powers routinely veto resolutions involving Israel. I think this business about Russia abusing its veto on the Security Council is, frankly, silly. It is an attempt to say that Russia has to agree with whatever the Western powers say on any particular situation. And if we are talking about the Syrian situation specifically, I would reiterate again, the Russians have a perfect right to their views about what the situation was in Syria, where the gas attacks took place or not, and their concerns about the mechanism, which they vetoed in November, was widely shared by other countries. So I'm afraid what my colleague is saying is that he wants to abolish the United Nations Charter when it suits him, and invest certain countries which might at some point in the future cease to be his friends with certain legal powers that no one has given them and which they should not have.
Well, Jihad Morakhadi, isn't this basically a message that's coming out of the West, that any entity, any nation that tries to resist, resist Western hegemony is going to pay a price, whether it's sanctions, whether it's attacks. Isn't that the overall message that they're trying to send?
Not at all. First of all, let me come back to one point. When a superpower sitting on the UN Security Council, who has veto power, guarantees that Syria is not going to use chemical weapons, and yet Syria uses chemical weapons not once, not twice, like many, many times.
Which hasn't been proven.
The attack in Khan Sheikhoun last year, the attack today in Douma. First of all, let me continue. The point is not the right of Russia to veto. They have every right to veto. I'm not putting this in question. But they have, above all, the obligation to respect their guarantee, the guarantee that they have given. In that sense, they did not respect it, and therefore their veto was not there, was not important anymore.
Okay, law of the jungle, but let me get final, Alexander
Mercuris,
your take on this. Where does this go when we have this type of mentality, when you basically, it seems like law of the jungle, your take on where do we go from here?
Well, I think it's a very serious situation. The one thing I would say is, I mean, this attack that was launched is a disastrous precedent. It should not happen. It is a violation of the UN security, of the UN Charter. It is an attack on the authority of the UN Security Council. But it was a limited attack, because the forces that are now deployed in Syria are so strong that they deter it. And can I just want to say one further thing?
30
seconds. Russians, let me reiterate again, deny that these chemical attacks that my colleague refers to have taken place, or that the Syrian government was responsible for them. That is their opinion. As a permanent member of the Security Council, they have a right to their opinion and a right to exercise their veto.
And on that note, I'd like to thank both my guests for being with us. Editor-in-Chief, Duran.com, Mr. Alexander Mercuris out of London. Journalist and political commentator, Mr. Jihad Morakhadi out of Beirut. As always, viewers, appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marcia Hashimi signing out. See you next time.